Thank you for choosing Flying with Best Fight Picks to help you prepare for this week's UFC event. This podcast episode is part of the Flying Brian podcast and is one of many episodes brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of mixed martial arts. They've been raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look them up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, instagram.com/UniqueKennels. If you haven't had your daily dose of cute, go there to get that in right now. They not only support this podcast, but they also support local fighters, promotions, and other forms of MMA media. Welcome to the 17th episode of Flying with Best Fight Picks. I like to refer to myself as Flying Brian, and here with me, as always, is the number one MMA analyst in the entire world, Daniel Levy from MMA Thought and also from Best Fight Picks. This man can be found on the World Wide Web at bestfightpicks.com. Go there, go to the upper right-hand corner, put in your email address, and Daniel will send you his plays as soon as he makes them for each and every fight card for free. You can also interact with him on Twitter at MMA Thought and also at Best Fight Picks. I would also love to interact with you, so follow me on Twitter at FlyingMMA. If you have listened to this show before, or even if this is your first time here, I would greatly appreciate it if you would hit the subscribe button. And if you're listening on iTunes, please give us a 5-star rating. Now, Daniel, we were unable to preview UFC Nashville as a team, but can you tell me how that event turned out for you?
Well, first of all, Brian, I was lucky enough to be in attendance for UFC Nashville. And as a fan, it was absolutely awesome to watch. Now, as far as betting is concerned, unfortunately, OSP was unable to cash that 3-unit play we had with him. And you know what? It was a learning lesson because I thought going into it that he was going to learn from his mistakes he made against Ryan Bader. You know, he had a year since that fight. He got to go up against another great wrestler in Patrick Cummins and knock him out. But man, he showed terrible fight IQ and it was a very disappointing performance. So from now on, you can never pick OSP against a top 10 guy. Now, my only regret for this card is the fact that I didn't bet on Amanda Nunes and Beneil Dariush, two underdogs I was talking about all week. But you know what? I'm going to learn from that mistake this week with UFC Saskatoon, and I'm not going to be passing on anyone.
And the listeners need to know that, Daniel, you are a long-term winner, and you're going to continue the success that you've had for this year on this event that we're going to talk about, UFC Fight Night 74, that takes place live and mostly free on Fox Sports 1 from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. The first fight of the night is on UFC Fight Pass beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time between Misha Surkunov and Daniel, the Werewolf of Texas, Jolly. Misha Surkunov is 9-2, and Daniel, Werewolf of Texas, Jolly is 5-0. Right now, the odds have Surkunov as a huge favorite at minus 450, and Daniel Jolly is plus 360. Daniel, the Werewolf of Texas, Jolly, has a black belt in Kuk Sul Won, which is a Korean comprehensive martial art that attempts to encompass many forms of martial arts. So, in a way, you could say that this guy has a black belt in mixed martial arts. He also has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Two of his wins are by KO in less than 30 seconds each, but his last victory was a championship fight that went the entire 25 minutes. His level of competition, however, is very subpar, and he's also taking this fight on short notice to fill in for the charismatic Sean, the real OC O'Connell. Misha Surkunov has a background in judo and wrestling. Very little of his training in the past has been focused on striking. Evidence of this is that most of his wins are by submission, but he also has knocked out one person with standing strikes. His level of competition isn't the best either, but the guys that he has faced are way better than the guys that Jolly has faced. I see this fight ending in a submission in favor of Surkunov. What are your thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, you know, Misha Surkunov, he's a very hype prospect. Now, I'm not sure if he deserves the hype he's getting. You know, if he was going to fight Sean the real OC O'Connell, like he was initially supposed to, I would have picked Sean O'Connell. Now, this is a completely different matchup. The thing with Misha Surkunov is, you know, he turned a corner in his career. You know, he went and he fought my buddy, Tex Johnson. And when I say my buddy, I mean my buddy. I've been to lunch with this guy more than once. And he tapped out Misha Surkunov, no problem, with a, I think it was an ankle lock or a heel hook or something like that. And, you know, Tex Johnson is no joke on the ground. You know, obviously he submitted Brendan Ward in about 14 seconds and, you know, made the Bellator record there. However, like I said, this is a completely different matchup. And with Daniel Jolly, you know, he is undefeated at 5-0. He did go five hard rounds in his last fight, but he's very inactive. He barely ever fights. The last time he fought was May 2014. Prior to that, was December 2013. And then he only fought one time in 2012, and he made his MMA debut in 2011. So, I mean, the guy is lacking some experience. So for that reason, you got to go with Misha Cirkunov. But here's the thing. Be very wary of Misha Cirkunov. You know, word on the street is that, you know, he recently split with his longtime Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach, and that, you know, that Misha is his own head coach, and he doesn't really have any sparring partners. You know, he's the head guy at his gym. So whenever that's the case, you always got to be careful. But the good news is he's not fighting a top 10 guy. He's not fighting a top 15 guy. So he should probably be able to get it done here, but I'm absolutely not betting on Misha Cirkunov.
The next fight of the night that we're going to talk about is a lightweight fight between Shane Campbell and Elias Juju Silverio. Campbell is 11-2 in his professional career, and Juju Silverio is 11-1 right now. The odds have Shane Campbell as the underdog at plus 210 and Elias Silverio at minus 250. Shane Campbell has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He mostly utilizes a Muay Thai striking attack with mostly kicks, and the majority of his wins are by stoppages due to strikes. In his last fight against John the Bull McDessie, he threw a bunch of leg kicks before he was brutally knocked out by the big kibosh from the Bull. In Shane Campbell's bio, he says that he has not watched any film on Elias Silverio or researched him at all. Whether that is true or not, I don't know, but that is not something that I want to hear from a guy. You should probably watch film on your opponent. Elias Silverio, Juju, like Campbell, this guy is long for the lightweight division, and both guys have fought at welterweight, one division up. But Silverio uses length a little bit more efficiently than Shane Campbell, and he has better head movement. Don't get me wrong, it's only slightly better. He is also a Muay Thai striker. Most of his wins are by decision, and he has went to near the entire distance in all of his UFC fights, so we know that his endurance is at least sufficient for this level of competition. He also says that Anderson Silva is his hero. That's basically good enough for me. I'm picking Silverio on my UFC pick'em by decision and avoiding the counter move. Daniel, how do you see it?
You know, prior to Elias Silverio's last fight against Rashid Magomedov, he was a very, very hyped prospect. I mean, that fight against Isaac Valley Flag where he completely destroyed him, the fight with Ernest Chavez where he completely destroyed him, and then he goes in there against Rashid Magomedov and he got taken to school in a way that we haven't seen before, you know, in a way where Rashid Magomedov is a guy that we have to look out for. Now, the thing is, there's two ways this could go down. You know, either Elias Silverio could learn from the mistakes he made, you know, because he was exposed in almost every aspect of the game and he could come back much improved, or it could literally shoot his confidence and, you know, he might not be the same. Now, the thing with Shane Campbell is he's also coming off a devastating loss. You know, obviously John McDessie knocked him out in devastating fashion. But the thing with Shane Campbell is, you know, obviously he does have a good striking background. You know, he's fought at K1 before, which is no joke. But the way it's translated into MMA has been kind of hit or miss. You know, he stands real tall, throws a lot of leg kicks, which is going to be, you know, it's going to make him more susceptible to the takedowns, especially when he's fighting a guy like Elias Silverio. So Shane Campbell, he's got to throw less kicks and throw more hands, but he's known mostly for his kicks. So I got to favor Elias Silverio just because I think he's more well-rounded. But the reason I'm not betting on it is because I just want to see how he recovers from such a devastating loss.
The next fight of the night is a flyweight fight featuring a guy that has won all of his wins in the bantamweight division. This fight's going to take place on Fox Sports 1 beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific time between Chris the Greek Assassin Kalaitis and Chris the Real Deal Beal. Kalaitis is 8-2 in his professional career, and the Real Deal Beal is 10-1. Currently, the odds have the Real Deal Beal at minus 165 and the comeback on Kalaitis at plus 145. Kalaitis is ultra durable. He has never been finished by strikes. His wins are balanced between decision, stoppage due to strikes, and stoppage due to a submission, but he hasn't finished a fight with strikes in the last 4 years. His only win inside of the octagon was a decision victory over Patrick the Hooligan Houlihan on just 5 days' notice. To me, that's a big accolade, actually. He has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I don't know how many guys have pulled one of these off in the octagon, but one of his 8 wins is by Gogo Plata. Chris the Real Deal Beal has won 10 fights. All of those wins were in the bantamweight division, so I don't understand why you would come off of 10 consecutive wins in one division, decide to drop to flyweight where he's going to be at for this fight, and he was there for his last fight where he lost to Neil Two Tap Siri in his 125-pound debut. A couple of fights ago, he finished Patrick Williams with a highlight reel flying knee knockout. It was absolutely beautiful. I couldn't talk about it enough. Again, I have no idea why this guy dropped to flyweight. Maybe you know some insight on this, Daniel, but he does not throw a very diverse striking attack. Because of the questions that I have about the real deal Beal, I am picking Calatus to get the victory here. I've put him on my UFC pick'em by decision, and I'm considering the counter move. Take her away, Daniel.
You know, it's funny. I kind of consider Chris Beal to be like an 125-pound Chet Congo. And let me explain what I mean by that. If you look at the guy, he looks like the most scary, athletic, you know, guy in the flyweight division. He looks like he can knock anyone out. And then you watch him fight, and it's like, does this guy know how to fight? And, you know, his fights are super ugly. Now, the thing is, like you alluded to earlier, Brian, you mentioned he goes 10-0 at bantamweight. And then he drops down to flyweight. I mean, I don't understand because he's a huge bantamweight anyways. And then at flyweight, he's barely making the weight. He's gassing out after the first round. So, I mean, we're going to have to see if he's made some adjustments because, I mean, it just seems like the wrong weight class for his body type. Now, as far as Chris Calatus is concerned, this guy is as tough as they come. You don't just take a fight against Patrick Houlihan on 5 days short notice. And not only did he take it on 5 days short notice, Brian, he goes in there, he gets his back taken in the first round, which we all know Patrick Houlihan wants to take your back and choke you out. So what happens? He takes his back, Chris Calatus gets out of it, and then he subsequently grinds out Patrick Houlihan for the remaining rounds, and he gets the decision victory. Then he goes in there against future title challenger Ray Borg, and you know, even though he lost that fight fair and square, he at least gave him a fight, and I'm pretty damn sure that Chris Beal would get tapped out in the first round by Ray Borg. Now, as far as how they match up, Chris Calatus is going to look to take it to the ground. Chris Beal is going to look to keep it standing. Now, the thing with Chris Beal is, as far as his ground game is concerned, at least at 125 pounds, I mean, he was competitive grappling with Neil Seary. Now, Neil Seary, he's a stud, but Neil Seary is known for his boxing. He's not known for his grappling game, and he was basically getting out grappled by Neil Seary. Chris Beal was. So, if this fight goes to the ground, Chris Calatus is going to have the edge all day. Now, if by some stretch of the imagination, Chris Beal can, you know, stuff the takedowns and keep it standing, maybe he'll have an edge there, but I don't see that happening. And I think Chris Calatus is going to get the upset here. So, assuming he looks good at the weigh-ins, I'm going to put one unit on Chris Calatus.
And being the smart man that I am, I'm going to follow you on putting that one unit on Chris Calatus. Our next fight is in the light heavyweight division, featuring two guys that used to fight in the heavyweight division. We've got Marcos Rogério de Lima versus Nikita Krylov. And a lot of people know that I love talking about nicknames. Here we've got Pejau versus Al Capone. And Pejau means Bigfoot. So sorry, de Lima, but that nickname is taken. Give it back. Nikita Krylov's nickname is Al Capone. So he obviously wins the battle of nicknames here. But as for their fighting skills go, Nikita Krylov is a master of sports of Ukraine and Kyokushin karate and hand-to-hand combat, a master of sports in submission fighting, and he was the 2013 ADCC Ukraine champ. Yet, at times, he seems to throw technique right out the window and gets a little bit crazy in there. All of his wins are by first-round finish. De Lima, like Krylov, usually finishes fights early. This will be his third UFC fight, and he has spent less than 2.5 minutes inside of the octagon. Although he is fairly new to the UFC, he's kind of a veteran. He's 30 years old, and he fought one time in Strikeforce and has been a pro since 2009. He does not have the best grappling skills, which is fine because neither does Krylov. I don't think we see much grappling in this fight. I think that if Krylov can get in there, not get a little crazy, but avoid the big punches early from De Lima, I'm going to get a little crazy and say that Nikita Krylov knocks out fake Bigfoot with a head kick early on in this fight. Daniel, your buddy, the Clown Kid, seems to love Krylov. Do you feel the same?
You know, my buddy Andrew the Clown Kid Lawrence, I couldn't agree with him more here. You know, when you talk about Marcos Rogério Pesão de Lima, he's one of these Brazilian bombers that basically has a 4-minute gas tank. You know, in those first 4 minutes of the first round, you better be careful because he's going to swing some big hooks, and chances are if he catches you on the button, you're going to go down. But the good news is you can avoid that. If you weather the storm, you can finish this guy and make him quit. You know, if you watch his Strikeforce fights, he didn't look that impressive. Now, obviously, you know, the time has passed and he's evolved and gotten a lot better, but I think Krylov is actually a really decent prospect. Now, I know he gets a lot of heat because of his fight with Soa Pelele, But my perspective on that fight is completely different than everyone else's. I'm going to tell you why right now, Brian. You know, so first of all, Soa Pelele weighed 265 pounds at the weigh-ins for that fight. So chances are he weighed about 275 on fight night, right? And Nikita Krylov, what, he weighs in at like, what, 230, 240. I mean, he's a 205er. He's not a heavyweight. He goes in there against a heavyweight. And I mean, he's teeing off on Soa Pelele. And Soa Pelele is looking for a way out. He's covering up. You know, he's turning against the fence, looking for the ref to stop it. But the fact that Nikita Krylov was a weight class smaller, he just couldn't put him down with his punches. But now that he's dropped a weight class, the power's really translated at 205 pounds nicely. You know, his only loss is obviously to OSP. And we mentioned earlier, OSP is going to beat you if you're not in the top 10. And Krylov's not in the top 10. And neither is Pezao de Lima. Now, the thing with this fight is, as long as Krylov goes in there and weathers that storm, he's going to finish de Lima, whether it's a knockout, whether it's a guillotine choke. I just see him getting the upset here. So I'm going to put one unit on Nikita Krylov, assuming he looks good at the weigh-ins, which I think he will. I mean, the kid is like 22, 23. He's making big improvements every fight. He's got a lot of experience for his age already. He's a finisher, and I think he's going to finish this fight.
You mentioned an upset for Krylov. Right now, the odds have Fake Bigfoot at minus 145 with the comeback on Krylov at plus 125. The next fight of the night is a bantamweight fight between Eve Tiger Jaboyne and Felipe Aranches. Right now, the odds have Aranches at minus 205 and Eve Jaboyne at plus 173. Eve Jaboyne is 20-9 in his professional career, and Aranches is 16-7 with one draw and two no contests. Aranches has a black belt in Muay Thai and a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Early on in fights, he throws a lot of dynamic kicks. Unlike some Jiu-Jitsu players, when he is on his back, he's not content to stay there, and he is actually pretty good at getting back to his feet or reversing the position. He is 9 years younger than his opponent, Eve Jaboyne, and he has never been finished with strikes. Eve Jaboyne, this dude has been fighting for an extremely long time. He made his pro debut back in 2001. I was in the sixth grade. His background is in kickboxing. He trains at TriStar, though, with Firas Zahabi, which that's a big accolade right there. His two largest downfalls are his MMA miles. He's got a whole bunch of them. And the fact that he has been finished with strikes five times. Three of those were his last three losses. And as you and I talk about all the time, the chin does not recover. I'm picking Aranches by KO or TKO in the third for the Flying Squad UFC Pick'em. And I've put the Brazilian on my counter move team. What do you think, Daniel?
You know, Felipe Sertanejo Aranches versus Yves Jaboyne is going to be a really good showcase fight in the UFC bantamweight division. You know, when you talk about Yves Jaboyne, this guy's been in the game so long. You know, back in his prime, he'd throw some spinning back kicks that were so fast, some flying knees. He'd always stand and bang with everyone. You know, he went to a split decision with Rafael Sunsao, who's currently the number three ranked guy in a weight class up. And, you know, as you mentioned, Brian, those MMA miles, they catch up to you. You know, the guy's 35, 36 now. He's been through it all. And unfortunately, this is not going to be a good night for him. You know, when you talk about Felipe Aranches, in my opinion, this kid is very underrated. You know, he starts his UFC career at 145 pounds. He makes his debut against Yuri Alcantara. And you don't simply make your UFC debut against Yuri Alcantara. And he goes all three rounds. And then, you know, he's got some good victories in between there. You know, he knocked out Godofredo Pepe. And he went to a split decision with Kevin Souza. Now, if you know about Kevin Souza, a lot of people consider this guy to be the dark horse at 145 pounds. You know, he's basically knocked out every single person he's fought. The guy is 6 feet tall and has an 80-inch reach at 145 pounds. And Felipe Aranches went to a split decision with this guy. I'll tell you right now, obviously MMA math doesn't work, but when you talk about Aranches' losses to Andre Feely, to Yuri Alcantara, to Kevin Souza, you know what those guys would do to Yves Jaboyne? They'd finish him in the first round. And, you know, Felipe Aranches went to, you know, very competitive decisions with these guys. Now he's dropping to his natural weight class of 135 pounds. And a lot of people are saying stuff like, well, is the weight cut going to be tough? You know, how's he going to react on fight day? Let me tell you what right now, Brian, the guy walks around at 156 pounds. So bantamweight's actually his natural weight class. And I've been following his Instagram. I've been looking at the pictures he's been posting. This guy is ripped. He is ready to go. He's more focused. He's more determined than ever. And, you know, I like Yves Jaboyne a lot, but this is going to be a very bad night for him. I have Felipe Sertanejo Aranches winning inside the distance, and I'm going to put three units on Felipe Aranches.
I said it before, I'm a smart man. I'm going to follow you on those three units, Daniel. I think that everyone listening to this podcast should as well. Our next fight is the main event of the prelims. We've got a lightweight fight between Sam Hands of Stone Stout and Frankie Perez. I'm going to talk about the nickname thing again because I love that. Sam Stout, his nickname is Hands of Stone. I think that in order to keep a nickname like that, you have to win a lot of fights by KO or TKO, and you have to at least win one fight every 2 years by KO or TKO to keep that nickname. He has not won a fight in that manner in 4 years, so sorry, Sam, you can no longer have that nickname. It currently belongs to flyweight John Lineker. But Sam Stout's record is 21-11 with one draw, and Frankie Perez is 9-2. Right now, the odds have Perez at minus 135 with the comeback on Sam Stout at plus 115. So it's really close. Sam Stout is another guy who has been around for a really long time. He made his pro debut back in 2003, which means I would have been in like the eighth grade. When I think of this guy, I think of a knockout artist, probably because of that nickname I just said, but the majority of his wins, like I said, are by decision. He has a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but only one win by submission. And that submission win was way back in 2006. Frankie Perez didn't debut in MMA until something like 2010. So in short, I think that this guy is way past his prime. Frankie Perez is a young guy. He has a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and he has used that to achieve 5 of his 9 victories by submission. He throws a lot of kicks early, but as the fight goes on, he ends up just throwing punches. Honestly, I'm not that impressed with Frankie Perez, but I'm just more confident that Sam Stout is going to lose this fight. So I'm picking Frankie Perez by decision or stoppage in the third, but no counter move. How do you see it, Daniel?
You know, Sam Stout, he's such a veteran of the game. You know, back in the day, you used to call him Mr. Fight of the Night because most of his fights would be Fight of the Night. And, you know, the guy's a striker. You know, it's funny. You mentioned his nickname, Hands of Stone, and he only has one win via KO inside the UFC, and that's to Yuji Buen. And, I mean, the guy's not a power striker at all. He's more of a volume striker. But, you know, he's at the end of his career. He's declined tremendously. And his striking has not looked good at all in his last 7 fights or so. And, you know, his last win was against Cody McKenzie. And even in that fight, he was getting tagged by the jab. He got taken down. I mean, it just wasn't very impressive. And his win before that was against Carlos Fodor. I actually thought he lost that fight. So the guy really hasn't looked that impressive in a very long time. You know, to me, I consider wins and losses. You know, I look at everything. Like when we were talking about Felipe Aranches, you know, he lost to Kevin Souza, but he looked very impressive going to a split decision with that guy. With Sam Stout, he's been getting blown out the water in his losses. And then in his wins, it's been like, well, I'm not sure if you really won, but I am sure that you didn't look good at all. So the thing with Frankie Perez is this kid trains with Frankie Edgar in Toms River, New Jersey. He's got Mark Henry as his coach, and he's going every day. You know, I think he's training with the Rutgers wrestling team with Frankie Edgar. And I mean, the guy's making daily improvements. Now, in his UFC debut, he took it on very short notice against Johnny Case. And a lot of people consider Johnny Case to be one of the scariest prospects in the UFC 155-pound division. So to make your UFC debut on short notice against a monster like that, it's not going to go well for anyone. And you know what? Even though Frankie Perez got his ass kicked and took it like a man, he even got the takedown early in that fight. And that tells me that with a full camp, he's going to take Sam Stout down. He's probably going to submit him. And on the feet, the kid ain't half bad either. You know, throw spinning back kicks. He'll throw some flying knees. He's got some good punches. And I know that when you're training with guys like Frankie Edgar, guys like Edson Barboza and Marlon Moraes, all areas of your game are going to improve on a daily basis. Also, I've been following his Instagram as well. He's in great shape. He's ready to go. So most likely, I'm going to put around 1.5 to 2 units on Frankie Perez for the victory.
Before we move on to the main card portion of this, I would like to remind you that if you like what you are hearing, please hit the subscribe button and also follow Daniel and I on Twitter at Best Fight Picks and at Flyin' MMA, respectively. The main card portion starts at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time on the same channel we were just on, Fox Sports 1. We've got a women's strawweight fight between Marina Moros, the Iron Lady, and Valerie Trouble Letourneau. Marina Moros, this girl actually has a background in boxing, but like Ronda Rousey, almost all of her wins are by armbar submission. Her first fight in the UFC, she came in as an enormous underdog and made quick work of Joanne Calderwood. And after that fight, she cut a promo in an attempt to get a title shot at the current champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I frequently give out little bits of information that are absolutely worthless, and this is that bit of information for this fight card. Marina Moroz is a very, very pretty lady. If you don't believe me, listeners, I implore you, go look her up right now. Now, Valerie Letourneau, her only losses in her entire mixed martial arts career are to the absolute top ladies in the game, like the next lady that I think deserves a title shot at the strawweight champion, Claudia Gadelha. So that's a loss, but that's fine. She also trains at American Top Team, which is another accolade, somewhat out of wishful thinking, somewhat out of I think that she's the better fighter. I've got Moroz by submission, and I've also put her on my countermove team. Your turn, Daniel.
You know, Moroz is a very interesting prospect. Like you mentioned, Brian, she does have that boxing background, but most of her victories are via submission. You know, she goes in there in her UFC debut against a minus 900 favorite in Joanne Calderwood. And, you know, they're fighting on the feet. Moroz is landing some big shots standing. She actually got hit with a couple shots herself. Then she pulls guard and immediately snatches that first round armbar. So this girl is something special that we don't see very often. Now, I mentioned the fact that her striking defense probably isn't the best because she did get hit a couple times against Joanne Calderwood. But you know what I really liked about it was her heart. She got hit very hard and, you know, she didn't take a step back. She didn't start covering up. You know, she didn't do any things that I consider a red flag when she got hit. She kept going forward. She pulled guard and she got that armbar. Now, as far as Valerie Letourneau is concerned, she's a striker just like Joanne Calderwood. You know, it's going to be the same kind of matchup where Valerie's going to look to keep the fight standing and Marina Moroz is going to have the option to either keep it standing or take it to the ground. So for the fact that she has more ways to win, you got to pick her. Now, another tidbit, Letourneau looked absolutely terrible at the weigh-ins last time. You know, she dropped to 115 for the first time. Man, she did not look healthy at all. So we're going to have to see if, you know, maybe she got a better nutritionist. Maybe, you know, maybe she's coming in lighter this time. Who knows what the deal is? But I know one thing for sure. Moroz looked awesome in her UFC debut, and she's got more ways to win this fight, so I'm picking her for the win.
Our next fight takes place in the lightweight division between Olivier, the Quebec kid, Aubin Mercier. That's got to be the longest name ever. He is 6-1 in his professional career, and he has taken on Tony Sims, who is 12-2. Currently, the odds have Olivier Aubin Mercier at minus 240 with a comeback on Tony Sims at plus 200. Tony Sims made his UFC debut on short notice, one weight class up at 170 pounds against Steve the Creepy Whistle Montgomery and got a quick knockout victory. His only loss in the last 8 years was a controversial split decision loss to Drew Dober that I think that he probably won. Surprise, surprise, this guy's background is in boxing and he has 10 victories by stoppage due to strikes. Olivier, the Quebec kid, Aubin Mercier, has a blue belt in Taekwondo, a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and a black belt in Judo. In short, this guy is extremely well-rounded, but you would not be able to see that by just looking at his record because all of his victories are by submission. Fun fact, these guys have the same exact reach. They're both southpaws, and both guys land about 4 significant strikes per minute. I think this is going to be a really fun fight, but I also think that Tony Sims continues to knock his opponents senseless, and I've put Tony Sims on my UFC pick'em by stoppage due to strikes in the third. Last time I picked against you and Tony Sims, it didn't work out for me. What are your MMA thoughts, Daniel?
This is such a good fight, and in my opinion, Brian, this might be the toughest fight to call on the entire card. Now, with that being said, I think the line should be at a pick'em, so when I see plus 200 on Tony Sims, that really stands out. Now, let's talk about how they match up. You know, obviously, Olivier Aubin Mercier, man, this kid, all his wins are via submission. Like you mentioned, Brian, he looks to get the fight to the ground. He's got great judo, but I mean, he'll take your back and choke you out too. Now, he's making big improvements in his stand-up. That's been the weak part in his game. You know, you saw the fight with Chad Lepree, and Lepree just basically walked him down and outstruck him for the entire fight. And it's funny because it ended up being a split decision. So, you know, maybe he has some kind of effect on the judges, this kid. Now, here are a couple weaknesses I've seen in his game. Olivier Aubin Mercier, he goes in there against Jake Lindsey, who we all know probably isn't one of the best fighters in the UFC. Jake Lindsey takes down Aubin Mercier with an inside trip. I was like, dude, are you getting taken down by Jake Lindsey? Then in his next fight against David Machado, he gets dropped by David Machado. So he's getting taken down by guys he shouldn't be taken down by. He's getting dropped by guys he shouldn't be dropped by. And now he's fighting Tony Sims, who can drop almost anyone he fights. I mean, you talked about that loss to Drew Dober. And I mean, it's so laughable because we talk about controversial decisions all the time and how they're a part of the sport. But this wasn't even one of those fights that could have gone either way. It was a clear 30-27 for Tony Sims. You know, he goes in there in the first round. He drops Drew Dober like two or three times. Then he tries to go for a guillotine and Drew Dober somehow escapes. Then immediately Tony Sims is attacking for a triangle. And then in the subsequent rounds, he takes down Drew Dober. I have no idea how he lost that fight. Now moving forward, this is a really good fight. And on the feet, Tony Sims is going to have the edge. It's going to come down to, can he stuff the takedowns? But I mean, I'm pretty damn sure that Tony Sims is an Iowa State champion wrestler, something like that. So I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't be able to stuff the takedowns. But the thing with Aubin Mercier is that he's one of these guys like GSP in the sense that it's not just about your grappling credentials. It's not just about your boxing credentials. It's about how you implement everything into the MMA game. And he mixes his striking to his takedowns really well. So if he can fake out Tony Sims and get him to the ground, potentially take his back, he could get the submission here. But I haven't seen any reason to believe that's going to happen because Tony Sims has looked damn impressive in all his fights. So I'm picking Tony Sims to win here, but as far as a bet's concerned, this is another one of those where you got to wait for the weigh-ins.
I'm going to pick your analysis apart just for a little bit here. I'm not too much. One, you said that Olivier Aubin Mercier possibly has an effect on the judges, so maybe he's the Canadian...
Cathal Pendred.
Yeah, maybe he's the Canadian Cathal Pendred. And then the next thing you said, that Tony Sims was a state champion in Iowa in wrestling. But this isn't Greco-Roman wrestling. This is mixed martial arts. Last thing, you mentioned that Olivier Aubin Mercier got walked down by Chad Lepree, and that's going to help me transition into the next fight. Our next fight is in the lightweight division between Chad, the disciple, Lepree, and Francisco Masarandua Trinaldo. Lepree is 11-0, and Masarandua is 17-4. Currently, the odds have Lepree at minus 335, and the comeback on Masarandua Trinaldo at plus 275. Chad Lepree has a purple belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu under the coach at TriStar, Firas Zahabi, which is an important accolade. Despite that, when I think of this guy as a devastating striker, his last five fights have went to decision. Francisco Trinaldo, I think of this guy as a grinder, and his last five fights have also went to a decision. He has a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He implements a kickboxing, submission wrestling kind of style. So this is striker versus grappler here in Chad Lepree. Because both of these guys have went to decision in their last five fights, I think that because Chad Lepree also lands twice as many significant strikes per minute as Trinaldo, that he's going to use that to his advantage and get his sixth decision victory in a row. Daniel, what is your decision?
You know, Francisco Masarandua Trinaldo, he's one of these guys that I look to fade almost every single time he fights. And I'll tell you why. I mean, first of all, he's about 35, 36 years old, and he's very slow. You know, he comes out very hard for that first round, but then after that, he gasses out, and, you know, he's not the same. But he has been winning his past couple of fights. You know, I bet against him in that Norman Park fight. I thought Masarandua lost. I thought he lost the first round and the third round. But like we always say, controversial decisions are a part of the sport. And this wasn't like a Tony Sims versus Drew Dober situation where it was like, are you kidding me? This was like a damn. I thought Park won, but I can live with it. Whatever. No big deal. But as far as this matchup's concerned with Chad Lepree, you know, we mentioned Lepree will walk guys down. He'll strike hard. He'll mix in the takedowns. And he's very good. Now, the thing with Chad Lepree is I got a different kind of concern with this guy. He's a guy that I'm going to look to fade in the future. I'm going to tell you why right now, Brian. If you listen to this guy's interviews, and man, I almost feel bad talking about this, but I think the guy has probably taken a lot of punches, more punches than he should. I mean, he's kind of stuttering his words a little bit. He's slurring a lot. Now, you know, maybe he was born with a speech impediment. Who knows? But I'm going to guess that it's a result of taking so many shots, because if you watch his style, he likes to stand and bang, and the guy is very tough. In that last fight with Brian Barberena, you know, first round, Chad Lepree's looking like a killer. Second round, you know, it's a little closer. And then third round, Brian Barberena's taking it to Chad Lepree. Now, the thing with Lepree, like I said, once he starts fighting these top 10 guys, top 15 guys, I'm going to look to fade him because one of these times he's going to get laid out. There's only so many punches you can take. And I mean, when you listen to his interviews, like I just alluded to earlier, it's kind of scary hearing him talk, man. He's really slurring those words. I know he's taking a lot of punishment. Now, fortunately for his sake, this isn't going to be the fight to expose that. He's probably going to go in there and win a 30-27 or a 29-28 unanimous decision over Francisco Masaranduba Trinaldo. But look out, because as soon as Chad Lapree fights a serious striker, I'm going to be fading him big time.
You mentioned fading him, and that's going to transition right into the next fight, a welterweight fight between two guys that I say fade both of them. We've got Patrick the Predator Cote versus Josh, I hate this nickname, the People's Warrior Berkman. Patrick the Predator Cote is 21-9, and the People's Warrior is 28-12. Currently, the odds have Berkman at minus 135 and Cote at plus 115. Here comes my most in-depth analysis of this entire fight card. I say fade both these guys, flip a coin, and when I flipped my coin, it got Josh Berkman. I picked him by decision. Certainly, your decision-making process was way more lengthy than that, so lay it on us.
Well, it is funny because, you know, both these guys are fades like you just mentioned. Now, here's the thing. Patrick Cote, he's got this reputation of being a brawler. You know, that fight with Chris Lieben, they stand and bang for three straight rounds and, you know, none of them takes a step back. And, you know, obviously that fight with Anderson Silva. At the time, guys were getting laid out left and right by Anderson Silva, and Patrick Cote gets past the second round. You know, like I said, right, looking at it now, it's like, oh, big deal. A bunch of guys got past the second round. But at the time, it was like, wow, this guy's got a chin. He took all his best shots and he kept coming. So, I mean, you got to give Patrick Cote credit where credit's due. Now, the thing with him is that, you know, he started getting a little chinny. You know, that fight with Alessio Sakara, he got knocked out brutally in the first round. Now, a lot of people like to talk about, oh, but it was to the back of the head. Listen, if you get knocked out, you get knocked out. I don't care what your official record says. I don't care if it's a win by DQ. He got knocked out. And Brian, like we mentioned every single episode of the podcast, every time you get knocked out, it makes it that much easier to get knocked out again. So Alessio Sakara knocked him out. Then in that fight with Steven Wonderboy Thompson, this is a funny one. I've talked about this a couple times. You know, he gets dropped by Wonderboy Thompson, but they used to train together at TriStar. So, you know, Wonderboy was being a good friend. You know, he drops him and then he helps him back up, gives him a hug and a high five, which is the kind of stuff that I can't stand. So if it wasn't for Steven Wonderboy Thompson being a nice guy, Patrick Cote would have gotten knocked out in that fight too. Now, the thing with Cote is that he's been getting smarter about his game plans, you know? He's got that TriStar mentality now. You know, he doesn't just stand and bang every single fight. He looks to transition his strikes to his takedowns. So it's almost like he's evolving and, you know, he's at the end of his career, but he's being really smart about how he approaches every fight. So, you know, for the fans listening, don't expect Patrick Cote to come out here and go toe-to-toe with Josh Berkman. You know, maybe he does for a minute or two, but he's going to be looking to get this fight to the ground. Now, as far as Berkman's concerned, the People's Warrior, which I'm not really sure what people consider him the People's Warrior, but you know what? You got to give the guy respect because he's a veteran of the game. He's been around for a long time. He's put on some very exciting fights. Now, the thing with Berkman is he's a very good striker. He's a very good grappler, but where he lacks is putting it all together, that complete MMA game. Also, I mean, you can maybe talk about his mental game a little bit. But here's the thing, Brian. You know, obviously, you know, he knocked out Aaron Simpson so he can knock people out. He choked out John Fitch so he can choke people out. But it's if he doesn't get that quick finish, it makes it very hard for him to transition his strikes to his takedowns. And when you're talking about Cote, that's exactly what he's been doing in his past couple fights. He's been transitioning those strikes to those takedowns. And when you talk about two fades and Cote is at plus 115. I mean, if you insist on betting this fight, take a shot on the dog. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm passing. But I do think Patrick Cote is going to get the decision here. One more thing I want to mention. There is a chance that we haven't seen the best from Josh Berkman yet. Because obviously in World Series of Fighting, you know, he's putting people away. He's putting UFC veterans away. But once again, this is the big leagues. This isn't the minor leagues. This isn't AAA. This isn't World Series of Fighting. This is the UFC. And when you step up to the big show, it's a completely different ballgame. So we're going to see how that translates against a faded Cote. But I think even a faded Cote is good enough to beat Berkman. But no bet.
Let's step up to the big show for the co-main event of the evening. We've got Neil Gumby Magny, who is 15-5, versus handsome Eric Silva, who is 18-5. With one no contest. Currently, the odds have Eric Silva at minus 170 and the comeback on Gumby Magny at plus 150. Of course, that's not his real nickname. I made that up. Neil Magny, I've gave out one play in the entire time that we've been doing this podcast, and Neil Magny made me look stupid when he got his ass whooped by Damian Maia. He showed that his ground game simply needs a lot of work. Eric Silva, at this point, he at one time had a lot of hype behind him, but John Fitch bump and humped that hype right out of him. With that said, he is still a very high-level competitor. I mentioned Neil Magny's weakness. That's the ground grappling. Well, Silva's strength might just be that, as he has won the majority of his fights by submission. It's possible that Damian Maia is just that damn good, and he's clouding my judgment here. But I've picked Eric Silva on my UFC pick'em with the Flying Squad via submission. I'm not doing anything on the counter move. This is a fun matchup, really. What do you think, Daniel?
Guys, if you want to get girls to like the UFC, invite them over for an Eric Silva fight. Thank me later. Now, as far as this matchup is concerned, you know, obviously, we were very high on Neil Magny in his last fight. And we thought, you know, he's on a 7-fight win streak. He's making these big improvements. But even in the midst of that 7-fight win streak, he showed the same holes he showed in the Damian Maia fight. Those holes that I thought he was going to be ready to answer to in that fight with Maia. You know, I thought for a fact, this guy, who I consider to be a very smart guy, a very cerebral fighter, I thought his mentality would be like, okay, I know exactly what Damian Maia wants to do here. The only thing he wants to do is get me down to the ground. And I mean, Neil Magny runs right at Damian Maia and gets taken down right away. Now, we talked about when we were breaking down that fight, you know, I said, hey, he's probably going to lose the first round. And then after that, you know, he's going to weather the storm and put it on him. So he loses the first round. But he lost the first round way worse than I could have ever anticipated. You know, within 30 seconds, he's already full mounted. I'm like, have you not worked on your jiu-jitsu at all? But obviously, you know, it is Damian Maia. When Damian Maia gets on top of you, chances are he is going to full mount you. But I was just not impressed at all with the fight IQ displayed by Neil Magny, a guy that I thought was actually a very smart fighter. Now, as far as Eric Silva is concerned, you know, he's one of these guys that he can put anyone away. And he usually does it in the first round. Now, in his losses, you know, it's been because he's thrown everything but the kitchen sink at his opponents and they wouldn't go down, and then he's gassed out and he gets taken over in the later rounds. Now, here's the thing. His fight with Matt Brown had to go through hell to beat Eric Silva. Not only did Matt Brown get dropped by a big body kick, you don't just drop Matt Brown. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, all you got to do to beat Matt Brown is punch him in the body. Yeah, yeah. Why don't you go try that strategy and let me know how it works, okay? So Eric Silva kicks Matt Brown in the liver, which if anyone gets kicked by an Eric Silva liver shot, they're going to go down. I don't give a damn who you are. I had to censor myself for the kids listening, right? No, but but look, I don't care who you are. If you get hit on that liver by the shin of Eric Silva, chances are you're going to go down from that and the ref's going to stop the fight. Now, this is how tough Matt Brown is. The fight didn't get stopped, and then Eric Silva takes the back of a rocked Matt Brown. He's got a fully locked in rear naked choke, and at this point, the old Matt Brown would have tapped out. At this point, any other fighter, including Neil Magny, would have tapped out, but Matt Brown showed why he's the immortal. He got out of it, and Eric's like, are you kidding me right now? I just threw everything at you. I dropped you. I had a fully locked in choke while you were hurt. And now you're teeing off on me in volume. Oh, shit. Now, the good news for Eric Silva is Neil Magny is nothing like that. You know, he's kind of more of a finesse guy where he's like a Rory McDonald light, a diet Rory McDonald. You know what I mean? He likes to pump that jab. It's like, if you recall that fight between Rory and Jake Ellenberger, you know, that little middle ground, that little buffer zone where Rory was kind of, you know, playing it safe. He wasn't being that same killer he is today. You know, he was just kind of, oh, I'm going to jab him a couple times, run around the ring. That's the kind of thing that Neil Magny does. And it's very effective because he won 7 fights in a row. But I think that's going to end here because Eric Silva, since his fight with Matt Brown, it seems like he's turned a corner mentally. That's always been the issue with him. You know, he's always had the technique. He's always had the aggression. He's always had the athleticism. It's always been about the talent meeting the mental. And I think that's what's starting to happen now. So if he's making the improvements that I think he's making, he's going to go in there and finish Neil Magny in the first round. So I'm looking to probably play Eric Silva here. Now, the money's been coming in on Neil Magny, so I'm just waiting for the line to drop even more. And I'm probably going to put, you know, about not more than 2 units on Eric Silva, but I do think this is the kind of fight he's going to win.
If you decide to go with some units on Eric Silva, I, of course, We'll be following you on that. Now, a lot of times on this podcast, I like to talk about the reach advantage. And Neil Magny, of course, always has a reach advantage in this division because he has the longest reach in the entire division. He, of course, will have a 6-inch reach advantage on Eric Silva. But if you remember the statistic, it's a person with a 6-inch reach advantage wins 60% of the time. So that's not set in stone. That means that a person that's at that 6-inch disadvantage wins 40% of the time. This is going to be in that 40%, I think, and I hope, because you and I are probably going to put units on it. But now, it's time for the main event of the evening. We've got Max Blessed Holloway versus Charles Dubronx Oliveira. Max Holloway is from the United States of America, and Charles Oliveira is from Brazil. Holloway is 13-3 in his professional career, and Oliveira is 20-4 with one no contest. Currently, the odds have Oliveira as the underdog at plus 200 and Max Holloway at minus 240. Holloway, all three of his losses are to guys that are at the absolute top of this sport. And one of those losses is controversial. In his last appearance, we saw him put a smackdown on Cub Swanson. And he improves by leaps and bounds every time that we see him because he's a young guy. Now, Oliveira, I could say the exact same things that I said about Holloway for Oliveira. The only difference here is that Blessed is mainly a striker first, and Oliveira is a jiu-jitsu player first. This fight is very close and difficult for me to pick, but I'm riding with Blessed on my UFC pick'em, avoiding the counter move, and even if you make a play on this fight, I'm not going to make it with you because I'm not confident in who is going to win this fight. I do this a lot. This is my stamp for fight of the night. Give us your last prediction for this episode of Flying with Best Fight Picks.
Brian, this is such a good fight. And I mean, when you talk about Charles Dubronx Oliveira, this kid comes into the UFC, 19 years old, and you know, he goes in there against Darren Elkins, who we all know is a stud wrestler. Darren comes in there, slams Dubronx, immediately gets caught in a triangle, and then gets tapped out with the armbar. And we're like, who is this guy? And then he goes in there against Efrain Escudero, back when Escudero was, you know, a big deal, back when he had just won Tough, and everyone's like, wow, Escudero's a really good fighter. He knocked out Cole Miller, all this stuff. And Dubronx absolutely owned Efrain Escudero. Now, obviously, he had a couple setbacks, you know, the fight with Jim Miller, the fight with Cowboy Cerrone, but I mean, the kid was like 22 years old. You got to give him a break. He's going up against the toughest guys at the time. But when he dropped to 145 pounds, it seems like he's really turned things around because now, you know, he's getting older. He's getting better every single fight. He's continuing to evolve. And, you know, the thing with his game is we all know he's got the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu at that weight class. Obviously, my buddy Brian Ortega might have a bone to pick with that, but let's put Brian Ortega on the back burner for a second. Charles Dubronx Oliveira, as far as MMA jiu-jitsu, it might be the best in the sport. Not just that weight class. You know, obviously, in terms of pure jiu-jitsu, you know, you do have the Brian Ortegas, the Fabricio Werdums, and all that. But in terms of MMA jiu-jitsu, Charles Dubronx Oliveira is right up there. You don't just get calf slicers inside the octagon. You don't just hit some of these chokes that he's hitting. And it's one of those things where as soon as he latches on a choke, he's going to finish it right away. So Max Holloway's got to be very smart here. But the thing with Max Holloway is, he's a very smart guy. He's a very cerebral guy. He's only 23 or 24 years old. And this kid's making such big improvements. You know, that fight with Cub Swanson, you know, a lot of people talk about, oh, but Frankie Edgar took the soul of Cub Swanson. Yeah, yeah. But if you recall that fight, Frankie just took Cub to the ground and beat him up there. And, you know, we all know you don't just stand and bang with Cub Swanson, right? Max Holloway stood and banged with Cub Swanson, and he beat him up badly. He was doing this really nice thing where he'd switch his stance, and, you know, he'd just keep Cub Swanson guessing the entire time. Cub didn't know what was happening. So the thing with Dubronx versus Max is Max keep that range by keeping, you know, by continuing to switch his footwork so that Oliveira can't get in close, because Oliveira is looking to close that distance and get this fight to the ground. Now, Oliveira usually gets the fight to the ground by pulling guard. And for some reason, guys like to engage him in that area of the game. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it's because they think, you know, if you're in top position, you're winning the fight, right? Well, if you're in top position against Charles Dubronx Oliveira, you better watch out, man. But here's another thing I want to point out is that Charles Oliveira doesn't necessarily have wrestling takedowns. I'm referring to a single leg. I'm referring to a double leg. That's the kind of stuff that's taken down Max Holloway in the past. You know, you recall the Conor McGregor fight. But the thing with the Conor McGregor fight was, you know, let's make an excuse for Max Holloway. Apparently, he injured his ankle 15 seconds into the fight. He's expecting a striking war, and, you know, he's losing at that because it is the interim champion, Conor McGregor, who is about to be the real champion. We'll talk about that for the UFC 194 episode. But, you know, when you're expecting a striking war, you're getting outstruck on the feet. You don't really expect the takedown. So Conor McGregor really showed that he's got that complete MMA game when he beat Max Holloway. But since then, Holloway's on this big streak, and he's getting better every single fight. Now, people want to refer to the Andre Feely fight. Yes, Andre Feely did take down Max Holloway. So obviously Charles can do it too, right? But the thing is, those kind of takedowns aren't necessarily the takedowns that Charles uses in his game. Charles doesn't really have a blast double. He has been getting better, though. Now, here's one thing I want to talk about, too. In Charles' last fight against Nick Lentz, and in all his fights, you know, he stands straight up, so he's very hittable. But he didn't respect the striking of Nick Lentz. And, I mean, any good striker in that weight class isn't going to respect Nick Lentz's striking. He has to respect the striking of Max Holloway. If he's getting tagged consistently by Max Holloway like he did by Nick Lentz, he's going to get knocked out. Because Max Holloway actually is a striker. It's not like Nick Lentz where if he hits you, it's like, all right, no big deal. I don't really care. I'll eat this guy's shots for breakfast. With Max Holloway, you better have a different mentality, man. Because if you start eating this guy's shots, you're going to go down. Now, another thing with Oliveira is when things don't go his way and he starts getting tagged a lot, he kind of has a little bit of quit in him. And I mean, it is what it is. We've seen it in tons of his fights. Obviously, we first saw it with Cowboy Cerrone. Gets dropped with that liver shot, starts covering up, lets the ref, you know, go in there and separate them. The fight with Cub Swanson, he gets hit with a big right hand. And there's like a little 2 second delay. And then Charles is like, all right, I'm done fighting, man. So he drops to his back. The ref stops the fight. Now, Cub Swanson made the famous quote, "I don't think I knocked him out. I think he quit." That's in reference to the Charles Oliveira fight, for those that don't know. And yes, he did say those words. And I mean, I believe it. He didn't get knocked out. He quit. So Charles Oliveira, he doesn't have a puncher's chance. He has a submitter's chance. He has a Brazilian jiu-jitsu chance. So if you're going to bet on this fight, this is what I think you should do. You should parlay Max Holloway with Demetrius Johnson, who's fighting next week. And now let me tell you something. This is going to be a very first for me. I never hedge bets, ever. I think hedging is for pussies. But I'm going to break my rule right now. And I think there's a really good hedge opportunity on this fight. And that's Charles Oliveira by submission at plus 353. So what I think you should do is, you know, if you want to bet this fight, you do that parlay with Max Holloway and Demetrius Johnson. You know, you put about 3 units on it. And then you put 1 unit on the hedge, which is Charles DuBronx Oliveira by submission. So either way, you're most likely going to win. But I think that's the way to go for this one. But as far as matchups concerned, I think Max Holloway is going to win. I'll tell you why. You know, I'm usually very scared when every single person is on the same person that I'm on. That usually means they're going to lose. But Max Holloway is such a smart guy. He's such a cerebral fighter. You listen to him fight. I mean, you listen to him talk and he's saying all the right things. He knows how tough Charles Oliveira is. He's not overlooking him one bit. Another thing, you don't just go 3 rounds with Conor McGregor. And Max Holloway did that and didn't get finished. And I mean, every single person that's fought Conor McGregor in the UFC has gotten knocked out. I'm talking about Chad Mendes, the number one guy in the world. I'm talking about Dustin Poirier, the number 5 guy in the world. And Max Holloway goes all 3 rounds with him. That's how tough this guy is. You know, I'll go on record and say that DuBronx will get knocked out by McGregor. So, you know, obviously MMA math, you don't want to put too much stock into that. But I'm just trying to let you know how tough Max Holloway is, in addition to his fight IQ and his skills, which are getting better every single fight. So I think most likely Max Holloway is going to win this fight, but obviously DuBronx always has a submitter's chance.
So that brings us to the end of this episode, Daniel. Before we get into our countermove teams, I'd like you to summarize the plays for us.
Yeah, so Felipe Aranches, you know, we have 3 units on him. That's booked. That's good to go. I mean, he's taking on the aging vet. He's got a 5-inch reach advantage. I think he's going to make Eves quit, or he's going to put him out cold, whichever happens first. So 3 units on Yves Jabouin. And then depending on the weigh-ins, you know, we're looking at potentially putting 1.5 to 2 units on Frankie Perez to beat Sam Stout. We're also looking at taking a 1-unit shot on Chris Kaleidis. maybe a 1.5 to 2-unit shot on Eric Silva. And then the big play with Max Holloway. You know, I'm trying to parlay Max Holloway and Demetrius Johnson. And if I decide to break my rule and hedge it, I will put a 1-unit prop on DuBronx via submission.
And listeners, if you didn't write that down as he was saying that, or you don't want to replay it, the way that you can find out what plays he made is you can go to bestfightpicks.com, put your email address in the upper right-hand corner, and Daniel will send you the plays as soon as he makes them, or you can just check out that webpage. We can also follow him on Twitter at bestfightpicks. Now, Daniel, you said that Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson is facing John Dodson next week. It's actually in 2 weeks, September 5th. It's going to be from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada, live and on pay-per-view UFC 191. So you and I will be breaking that fight card down in 2 weeks from right now. So look forward to that, listeners. But right now, let's reveal our countermove teams. You go first, Daniel.
Okay, cool. So, and one little thing, you know, I just gave out the plays, and obviously I forgot to mention Tony Sims. I don't have a play on him yet, but I do want to see the wins because plus 200 for what I consider to be a pick'em fight, you know, you got to take a shot on the dog there. So I'm waiting a little bit on that one because I know Aubin Mercier, he's no joke. He's a very good prospect, but so is Tony Sims. So, I mean, the line is definitely off. Now, as far as my countermove team is concerned, I got Eric Indio Silva. I got Felipe Sertanejo Aranches. I got Max Blessed Holloway. I got Nikita Al Capone Krylov and Frankie Perez.
And for my countermove team, I know that I said I was going to not put either DuBronx or Blessed on my countermove team, but I decided to go against that because it's a main event fight. So if it goes the distance, the winner has a lot of opportunity to land a bunch of strikes. I think that Max Holloway is going to win. So I've put Max Holloway on my countermove team. The rest of the team consists of Marina, really cute, the Iron Lady, Moros, Felipe Aranches, Nikita Al Capone Krylov, and Chris Kalaitis. That brings us to the end of the episode. Time for the shout-outs. And as I said, that we're going to do flying with Best Fight Picks for UFC 191 in 2 weeks. And the listeners are probably going to miss us, but they can listen to your show, Half the Battle, and also Best Fight Picks Radio in the meantime. Be sure to tell them about that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously, we have my show, Half the Battle. And this week, I got some very special guests. You know, obviously, everyone knows James Lynch from the Parting Shot podcast. One of the best guys in the game. One of the best opinions and voices in the game. It's always a pleasure to have him on my show. So that's going to be great. And then my other guest, Cody Saftick from Bookie Beatdown. Now, if you don't know about Bookie Beatdown, in my opinion, they're one of the most underrated pre-fight shows in the game. You know, obviously, they're at the Fight Network in Canada, and he's very good. I think he's one of the best fight analysts in the game. So I can't wait to go toe-to-toe, so to speak, against him. You know, hopefully we disagree on a lot of picks so we can have a nice little debate there because, you know, James and Cody Saftick, they are two of the best in the game. So it's going to be an honor to have them on my show this week.
And also from me, in the meantime, I will be doing a Flying Squad recap of UFC Fight Night 74. I record it right after the event, and I will publish it as soon as possible. And also, the number one MMA analyst in the entire fudging world, Daniel Levy, and I will be doing Best Fight Picks 101 on the week between this fight card and UFC 191, where we're going to tell noobs about what we're talking about with what is a parlay, what is a unit, all of those kind of things. And also, Daniel is going to tell us his mindset behind making these plays. And so, until next time, I thank you so much for listening to us. And if you liked what you heard on this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it, on SoundCloud, on Podomatic, on iTunes. Just hit that subscribe button. And if you're on iTunes, please give us a rating and a review. 5 stars is the only amount of stars that I will accept. Also, you can find Daniel on SoundCloud. Go to soundcloud.com/bestfightpicks and you can hear all of the sounds that he puts out as well.
Yeah, you know, obviously you mentioned how we're going to make the first part of the Best Fight Picks 101 podcast, you know, for the noobs. We're going to explain, you know, about the parlays and this and that, you know, what's a unit. But that's only going to be about the first 2 or 3 minutes. And then after that, for all you guys that have been following us for a while, I'm going to let you know about my mindset. I'm going to let you know about how I make these plays, you know, how I think about them, all the inside info, all that kind of stuff. We're going to go really in depth. It's going to be really cool. I can't wait for that. Now, as far as shout outs are concerned, I want to thank every single person that listens to the show, every single person that has our back. You know, I just can't thank you enough. And you all know who you are. So, you know, all the real people out there, this is for you. So thank you so much.
And thank you to Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. They've been raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look them up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. I've already had my daily dose of cute. Go get yours in right now. I look forward to hearing from you on social media, as does Daniel. You can find me at Flying MMA and Daniel is at Best Fight Picks. Until next time, Flying Squad, namaste.